Number 22, how to understand the King James Bible. We're past how to understand it, actually. We're just not going through it in the fashion that it should be, which helps in understanding, I hope. And let's turn to Philippians. This morning and later today, we're pretty much stuck in Philippians for another time or two here. How to understand the Bible. This is the Scriptures. This is the King James Bible. This is that which is perfect. It has to be rightly divided by following Paul, knowing that the Gospels is Old Testament and the Tribulation books are Hebrews to Jews. And Revelation is past, present, and future. That's all you have to know. You just got to believe that that Bible is the Word of God. So, we're going through the commandments of Paul. These are the things that he tells us that we should do. This is just actually doing. Philippians chapter 2. So, when you read through Paul, you find out that Paul has got more things to do than the Gospels even come close to saying things that they should do. And in the Tribulation books even, there's things that they should do, or else. The big key is or else. But we don't have the or else. These are the things that Paul says we ought to do to please God. It's that simple. He has made everything else so clean as such. These are the things that we should do to be the Christian and that kind of a thing. So we're looking at number 12. We did 8. Then we did 9. Did we do 10? Got notes? We do 10? Anyway, we're starting with 12. So you might want to leave a page if you're actually taking official notes. But otherwise, here they are. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. And again, this is just a general looking at the things we should do. And this one has a lot to do with... who's on there this morning, Sam? I don't know who that is. I guess we'll find out. This one is a little tougher in some ways because he says in verse 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Right there, the strife thing. We should not be having the arguments and the striving and those contentions and the whole thing. So there's where it states that. Then he goes on and he says, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Now remember, we're talking about the brethren here. Paul's very strong about the brethren. But he also said that when we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So, just keep that in mind. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. So our concern should be other people, not ourselves, but others. And that's very true. Then he goes on and says, let this mind be in you, which also in Christ Jesus. In other words, here's why he did what he did, or how he did it. Who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. That's what he did for others. So, if we could get a hold of this ourselves, apparently that would get rid of the strife and the vainglory. And vainglory, here's what vainglory is. Exclusive vanity excited by one's own performance. Isn't that good how that states? Exclusive vanity is all your own. Excited by one's own performance. You did a good job. That's vainglory. So you're talking to people because you know it all, you have it all, you've done it all, you just understand this thing. You just got it. Strive is to make efforts, to use exertions, to endeavor with earnestness, to labor hard, to contend, to contest. So if we think of other people more than ourselves, and we're not big on ourselves because we got it down so well, that should eliminate the striving. But now there's all sorts of options here to consider. And do the Scriptures cover these options? Well, sure they do. Because the options are, what if the other guy is strifey? And you're dealing with pride. And you're dealing with somebody who hates what you're having to say. You're dealing with somebody who doesn't want to hear what you have to say. You're dealing with people who are mad because of how you look, what you've done in your life. You've changed your life. Something. There's something that aggravates people or stirs people, And you really honestly want to tell them what you've learned. And you've learned a lot. And you have learned a lot. So then we should just back off and be that wimpy little, silent little, turn the other cheek kind of a Christian and let them just walk all over you and or whatever. How do we deal with that? I mean, Christ did. He let him kill him. And they let him torture him and crucify him and batter and beat him, made him walk naked on the cross, ignored him all the time. He preached that one message in John chapter 6, and a bunch of those people took off. And he knew they were going to anyway, but he still said the same sermon, but he didn't say it in an angry fashion or whatever. He just stated the fact. And look what happened. When we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So he did that. And he was God. He came down, manifested himself. He came down and did what he had to do. It's just like, how many times do you get mad at your kids for buying something, whatever, they don't have the money or whatever, or driving with anybody, doesn't have to just be kids, anybody in the church or whatever. And the only way for you to solve that thing, the problem that they're going into debt all the time, is for you to go pay the bill. And then the argument's over. The damage is done. It's over with. It's not going to be a problem. Don't go there with this. Don't. But, you know, Dad just says, well, I'm just tired of fighting her. So he just goes and pays the bill. That's what Christ did. He had the Old Testament, had the garden, had Noah, had the Old Testament, had the commandment, had the Levitical law, just not getting anywhere. Came and said, okay, I'll just come down, I'll do it myself. And that's what he did. And yet there was strife throughout the whole thing. He didn't come to peace, he came to make peace, he came to cause division. Because he knows division was going to come out of that thing. Because if he was going to have mismade everybody saved, he could have made them saved. He could have, you know, everybody's now saved. The brotherhood thing. He died on the cross for everybody, so I'm going to apply all my righteousness to everybody, whether they want it or not. And yet we know that in the tribulation, God's going to put the Spirit of God upon all flesh. So we're all going to get it. And besides that, when people are first born, they're given everything they need to know. So the question, it says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 2. So there are verses that tell us that we're not to get into these striving situations. Won't do any good. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 23. But foolish and unlearned questions avoid. Okay, why? Well, knowing that they do gender strifes. So people are going to ask you questions that you know, if you're going to continue this thing, you're going to get into an argument. You know it's coming. Because who's picking the fight? They're picking the fight. I get this all the time on the internet stuff. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men. Apt to teach, patient, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. We know the problem is they're their own enemy. So what good is it going to do for us to turn out an argument and make the big scene when we know that they are their own problem? And you can't tell them that because that'll just make them madder, kind of a thing. In meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, of God's peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil. We're taken captive by him as well. So we know that they're in the snare of the devil. We know that they have to be the ones to get out of it. We know that they have to realize that they are their biggest problem. And then if they're willing, you can show them how to get out, and you can show that to them, and there it is. They can turn to the Lord for salvation. They can get out of the mess they're in their lives. They can get over the bad day they're having. I mean, there's ways to help people through this whole thing. But there's more. Does it do any good? Just drive about it. That's what he's saying. Now look at chapter 2, verse 14, just up a little ways. Chapter 2, verse 14, he says, of these things, put them in remembrance. So there's some things to say. Charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearer. So we got some issues out there that they're trying to do. So they need to be strived with. Look at Romans 15. Romans 15, verse 30. Now I beseech you, brethren, for the Lord Jesus Christ's sake, for his sake, and for the love of the Spirit, that you strive together with me in your prayers to God. Okay, so if you want to put out an effort, you want to put out some kind of an exertion, you want to contest, you want to get in and make a push of some sort, okay, then you pray for Paul. Or your pastor, or your father, or kind of thing, your parents, your mother. Look at Philippians chapter 1. So we've got people that are striving. I mean, if you've got our people, are they unscripturally striving when they go and light fires and they say things to people that offends them or gets them upset or whatever? Is that the case? Philippians chapter 1, verse 27. Only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ. Remember, that's the risen Savior when he says that. That whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. So as Christians, we're to strive together. There are things taking place in this world, and we have to talk about them, and we have to show people. We are going to be under attack. There are going to be rumors. There are going to be things that are going on. There are going to be some challenges, and they are going to take away liberties. They're going to try to take away the King James Bible. They're going to try to correct it. They're going to try to change it. People are going to be giving you books about God, and they're not going to be true, and we're all together in this thing. This is a family affair here. What he says, striving together. Look at Colossians. Colossians chapter 1. So he says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. You're not the Bible answer man. And you don't need to go out there and contend and contest and get into arguments and fights and strivings. Colossians 1:29. Whereunto I also labor, 1:29. Whereunto I also labor, striving according to his working, which worketh in me mightily. So Paul does strive. He's working hard for people to get this thing. Is he going to get into an argument? Well, he has a conversation with a guy how many times before he leaves? How many times before he rejects a heretic? Twice. He just talks to him once, tries it again. I got to go. Goodbye. So he's not going to strive with him. But he's going to do everything he can for this guy to see it. He has tears, prays, the whole thing. Look at Romans 14:20. Here's something I think that we can be very guilty of doing without knowing it. I'm sure I have over the past. I hope I'm not anymore, but people might have different opinions about it. Romans 14, verse 20. Romans 14:20. For meat, destroy not the work of God. All things indeed are pure. And remember, all things are lawful for us anyway, right? That's another we could put, that fits right in there. All things are lawful, so what's the problem here? Well, if our chunk of meat that we can swallow and chew and taste and just, I didn't do that in the right order, I know. If we could chew, taste, and swallow, we can take that kind of thing with meat. A lot of people can't. And according to what Paul is telling us here, that we want to be careful with our striving and our discussions with people that is so deep or so heavy or so hard that they don't get it. And actually, what does the work of God do to a lost person? Romans chapter 2, he has what? His long suffering. Because he could have snuffed him out a long time ago. And if he snuffed him out a long time ago, he could have snuffed us out a long time ago. And I bet you somebody tried to talk some meat to us before we were saved and before we understood the King James Bible and all that stuff. And we just couldn't get it. And do you remember any arguments you have or strivings or anything like that that you're just not going to get it? Because you can't get it. I mean, you can't chew that thing. I could go take Chloe and put a T-bone steak cut with a little fat on the edge, the gristle, all that kind of stuff. I can give it. I can take her mouth and her head and go, come on, you eat that thing, little girl. And they'll swallow it and push on her tummy and one of those things, you know, and all that stuff. And it's just not going to do any good. But I know she's growing. And so when he says here, for meat, destroy not the work of God. God is working on a lost person somehow. Through scriptures, through your testimony or whatever. Or if nothing else, he's just being long-suffering with them. Romans chapter 2. And we can come along and actually, we can come along and hurt things for what God's trying to show that person. I've had people do that. I've had that to my list already. My little men's list we have on there. I've got some guys that are brand new into this stuff. I've got some guys that are pretty strong at this stuff, and there's already been a couple of strong conversations going on. And for some of those guys that have children and families and stuff, that could be pretty chunky meat. So if we're not careful, we can drive those guys away by something they can't handle. And yet, there's something that goes on with Paul that we don't get with Jesus as such. And that, remember the pattern we've had. What do we have? We kind of dated that thing. We changed it a little bit. For us to depart and for us to despise things and get to and realize that, that we're going to try to tell that to people that we've departed and we're despising this, whatever it is that you're concerned about, talking to somebody. And then Paul talks about prayer and tears. We've seen that. There's our list. We've got grace, truth, mercy, long-suffering, patience. That all needs to take place. But then comes this other part. I've talked about this a number of times. This is hard for us. This is the part where it needs to be reproved and even says a rebuke. And then we talk about, I can't memorize this thing, avoid, withdraw from such. Withdraw from such, not to strive, neither give heed, purge, reject, be not partakers, mark, note them, have no company, not to company with, put away from among yourselves, cast off, have no fellowship. That's the hard part. So what do? We try to stay with somebody as long as possible. What's going to happen? We're going to strive, we're going to argue, it's not going to get anywhere. And I bet you we've all done it. If we've been so concerned about something, about the Bible issue or salvation or churches or Great Commission, we get to the point where we just want to continue to strive with them and they don't want to. Is it possible that we've actually driven them away? I believe it's totally possible that we've driven them away. I know I've driven people away. But there also comes a time in our witness where you're supposed to do that. When they're not interested and you're not going to strive about it, you just calmly step aside from the issue, if that's at all possible for us. It's not possible for us if we're overly zealous and we want them to get it. And we are. We want them to see this stuff. But when he says, for meat, destroy not the work of God, we have to be careful that our meat that we understand with this King James Bible doesn't kill somebody else. And I know this is strange for me to say this because I'm not always been that way. But I see that with Paul's teaching. And I see that that's a very difficult thing to do because that means we have to leave it up to God again. We plant and we water. Okay, have you planted? Yeah, I planted. Did you water? I'm trying. Okay, well then, what good is the stripe? It'd be like Louie going out there and getting mad at his crops. You ever get mad at your field? Louie, I won't ask you. And you don't dare say anything. But the little kids always tell, did your dad, ever see your dad out there just standing in the field just chewing his crops up and down? Wheat, I'm telling you what, if you don't grow da-da-da-da, and I don't think he's probably done it with a tractor or two. You're laughing on that one. You stupid tractor. Like the tractor's going to fix itself. You got to get out there and you got to fix the tractor. You got to get out there and you got to water the field and all that stuff. But that's it. You know? And that's, we have to really try to deal with that. And yet, if you get out there, not like I'm talking farm talk here, you get out there and the crop isn't growing, after a while, I guess you're going to gut the thing and try it again. I would think you would just gut the thing and just go fishing. I don't know how you do all that stuff. So that does have to take place with us as Christians. So he says not to strive, let nothing be done through strife for vainglory. But he also tells us when it gets to that point, then get away from it. Put all that effort into trying to get those that are interested in seeing. Trying to take, you know how hard it, I'll bet just, it's really hard just to get the ground ready for planting. And the tractor does all the work, I know that. But still, you still got to get the tractor ready. You still got to take the time to do it. You go out there and you go, Mother Earth, you're about to be gutted. Because I remember that one time. That was pretty fun. But it still takes a long time just to get the ground ready. You got the thing all cut up. Then you got to spread some kind of stuff on it to make so the dirt goes, oh, I got to grow another crop this year. Here comes all my health food and all that kind of stuff before you even plant the seed. And we have to do that with people too. But we have to make sure that we're not going to be that tolerating, passionate, turn-the-other-cheek Christian forever. Because Paul also says, listen, if that person or those people are going to cause trouble in your family or your person, yourself, or whatever, in the church or whatever, then Paul also tells us these are the things that need to be done. And sometimes you got to gut the crop. What would you call that? You wouldn't cut the crop. You'd just dig it up. No fancy words in the farming industry, right? Give them time. They'll call it some kind of a Greek term for killing the plants, you know. So we need to try to reach folks with this stuff. We need to strive with them. And if they really reject it, you're supposed to reject them because they'll take down your kids. Or they'll take down the church. Or they'll take you down. Because after a while, you're going to be looking at them. They're going to be having more fun than you, who's trying to maintain some kind of a Christianity here. King James Bible, rather divided. You know you can't listen to that, but you like it. You know you can't look like that. But I don't know why you like that, but that's how people are. You know you can't go there, but they're going there. I want to go there. I'm tired of being dressed like him, so I'm going to kind of dress down a little bit. Just a little bit. And after about a year or two, you've dressed down quite a bit. And it can take you down. So Paul does tell us to get away when the time needs to be gotten away. So don't try to be that tolerating, passionate, I'll be there forever with these people, because they'll burn you eventually. But no point in striving with them either. Now, look at Proverbs chapter 1. Does that sound unchristiany to say that, you know, you can try and you can try and you can try, but there comes a time you need to say, I'm done. No, you can't come over anymore. No, we're not coming over anymore. No, we're not going to go here with you anymore. No, I'm not going to go to this store anymore because of what some of the things are changing in stores. Man, went to the mall the other day. It's been a long time since you've been there. The place stunk. Every store has got its own stink coming out of the doors. I haven't seen that before. Have you noticed that? And the stores are dark now. You go to some of these stores, you can buy anything if you can't see it. You know, it must be to cover up the prices. And there was one store in the mall that's got a little chair, some kind of a lounge or something in the front of the store before you go in. And this mother was dragging this, and it was dark, and the music was like spooky. And this mother was dragging this kid over to this little, we're going to go in here. And the kid said, I don't want to go in there. Well, you know, the little kid knew that it was a bad place to go in there. Come in here and have fun, kind of a thing. So, it's just terrible out there where things are going. Do we always have to tolerate what's going on in this world? Paul says not to strive, right? To strife or vainglory. It's kind of a, you're gonna argue with somebody because of why? Only by something to come comes to contention. There we go. What is that? Pride. That's that vainglory stuff. We get into these arguments because you want somebody to get it because why? You got it. And look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 23. Does it sound like an unchristian thing is to pull the plug and say to somebody, we're done? Well, look what God does eventually. Verse 23. Turn to you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Okay, so God's told people things. It's not that you haven't told somebody. Because I have called and ye refused. I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded. That's like saying, I've talked to you over the phone. I've called you on your cell phone. I've talked to you face to face. I sent you emails. I've invited you to church 10, 15, 20 times and you always say I'm coming. But ye have said at naught all my counsel and would none of you my reproof. This is really hard stuff for people to realize. This is God. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me. Wouldn't you think he would take them in then? They're finally calling on him. But he says, they shall seek me early, but they shall not, he says, I will not answer. It's a different time now. You had your chance. And these people have their chance, and for the sake of your family, or you, or your testimony, or even this church, there comes a time you've got to say, no, I'm done. I don't want to hear it. Either come back or list what I'm showing you. Get out your Bibles. I'll show you what I'm talking about. The new world stuff that nobody, I mean, they could care less that this world is going where it's going. And even I, a musician, can see some of this stuff. And after a while, you got to just say, listen, no more. Because God, one of these days, he's going to go, no more. And you know what these people are going to be doing during the tribulation. I really believe this without a doubt, is they're going to be preaching Paul. Because the tribulation is going to be so bad that they're going to be begging for God's mercy and God's grace, and there's going to be a preacher guy that's going to come along and show it to them. There it is. Look what he's done for you. You just call upon him and the whole spiel, and they're going to think they're saved, and they're going to find out they're not. Why? Because he says, they shall call upon me, and I won't answer. They'll be praying for relief, for help, for salvation, and God won't give it to them. So that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would none of my counsel, but despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. You've been wanting to do this for the last 100 years? Have at it. It's like a parent says to their kid, this is the way you want it to be. I've been trying to show you this for the last 20-some years. How old are you? 12, 13? 13, so you got a few ways to learn something here. And I've tried. I've showed it to you. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. You go live the way you want to live, which is what they all seem to want to do, which is understandable. Been there, done that. So we can't just think that that's a Christian thing, because God's going to do that someday. He did it to his own people. And yet when they rejected Christ and killed him, what did he do? He told Peter, I'll come back. I'll still be the Messiah. Then what does he do? Shoves them off to the side, goes to the Gentiles, because they didn't get the job. He goes to the Gentiles through Paul, gives the whole shebang to the Gentiles. I mean, everything just on a platter. And they reject his platter after a while. What does he do? He finally shuts that down and goes back to what? His own people that he already set aside. And wails a tar out of them. And then, there it is again. So we got to realize that God does that too. God will do that as well. It's amazing. Look at Romans chapter 11. The marvelous chapter about Jews, one of the two chapters, is so good to know. Verses 17 to 24 is a real tough thing to understand, because it sure does make it look like you can lose your salvation. Though he's talking about there being grafted into the tree, all that kind of stuff. Well, he's talking about the Gentile nation here. There's going to come a time where he's going to say, okay, we're done. I'm done with you Gentiles down there. We're done. That's we're done. And look at John 21. Look at John chapter 21. We hear people say, well, Jesus is tarrying. He's going to wait. He's going to wait till the last possible one is interested. I've heard that for years. If the Lord tarries, you ever heard that? If the Lord tarries, then I hope I can get Uncle Henry saved or whatever. And we've looked, and there's no word to talk about the Lord tarrying. Jesus saith unto him, if I will that he tarry till I come. What is that to thee? So Peter's seeing something taking place, and it's like none of Peter's business kind of a thing. What is a business to you? It's the only place you're going to find about tarrying. And then in Timothy, Paul tarries. So you need to know how to behave in the house of God. So Paul's going to tarry, but Jesus isn't tarrying. He's going to come when he's going to come. And so there comes a point with us that we need to put the foot down. But still not in a striving manner. Okay, that's number 12. That took a long time. A lot longer than I thought it was going to. Shift gears to number 13. There's another one, another point here. So that's the one that says, look, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Yes, we need to put out the efforts and be the Christian and try and reach people, plant water. It's a lot of work to plant water. I've never done a watering thing. You know, I'm one of those. I would have bought the circle thing and just and then set the timer and go back to bed. That's how I would have watered. You don't get very far that way unless you got somebody doing your work for you. Ta-da! Ta-da! So, watering is very difficult. Guys, ever get mad at the sprinkler pipes out there? Was it the sprinkler pipe's fault? Sometimes it is, I suppose. The thing breaks or whatever. I mean, what are you doing sitting under my tire? I suppose they can just break. Something still had to break it, though. Right. And when you're in a hurry, I know one thing. Probably the worst thing you can do with a sprinkler pipe is to shoot it. I've learned that. You can't do that. That's just you got these other little 10 sprinkler going, shh, 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 boom. And then something's not right. Coming out of the hole over there. Not that I've ever seen that happen or anything. Let's go back to Philippians chapter 3.
You got the weapon that did it.
Yeah, but it was not my finger. Philippians chapter 3. That's a hard thing to deal with, that striving thing, because, well, I'll tell you, people want to strive and argue with you. Soft answer does what? Turn us away wrath, so if you can keep your answer soft and show them the book. Pretty hard. Maybe it's just because of our pride you get into the striving and the screaming. Philippians 3:16. Here's another one. Nevertheless, whereto we have already attained, meaning Paul said beforehand, I haven't attained yet. But he says, basically, where you're at, we've all grown somewhere in our little lives here. Whereunto we have already attained, let us walk by the same rule. Let us mind the same thing. Well, what is that? What are you talking about here? What rule? What same thing? Go back to verse 13. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended. That's just one thing I do. Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. That's probably good advice from a grandpa and a grandma. What are you going to do about it? Might as well just get on with it, right? I'm trying to learn that. Well, I taught this wrong. I did this bad. I didn't do this right. This and that. And I'm still getting upset by it more and more and more. And I want to make up for it in the last few years I may have. But I've got to concentrate on making up for it and trying to do some things that's right in the next couple of years instead of constantly being grumped out about things I've done in the past. But that's just me. You folks have never done anything wrong in your past. I'm just fessing up here that I've taught some things wrong. I've been wrong. I've done things in the wrong manner, whatever. Well, I didn't know, but you didn't know. But so what? I didn't know. I still know what I've created. And not everything was better. There's one or two things I've done good somewhere in my past. But I can't park in that thing because it just drives me nuts. When I look at the Facebook and I see my old students that are no longer students, or I look back at just my past, and even just here, we've got to go on. We've got to go on. Sometimes I think even I have to actually go on. And sometimes you think you need to go on. And we do. But whatever that means, we'll see how life presents itself. But when he says here, forgetting those things which are behind. You can sit and whine about it. You can grump about it. You can tell people all about it. You can do all that. But you got to get past that stuff. You just got to get past it. You can't do anything about it. That's what I'm learning. I want to go back and try to fix things. I've learned that I can't do that. We just can't do that. But boy, if we could, we'd perk up a little bit. Reaching forth unto those things which are before. I press towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. What's that? Forgetting those things which are behind, reaching forth unto those things which are before. And if anything be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. So, see, if you don't even know what it is, if you don't even understand, maybe you haven't even done anything wrong in your past. Young people tend to think that, you know, they really haven't done anything wrong yet. Boy, mom and dad sure have, but I'm going to kind of a thing. Well, you can find out someday, you know. But ask God to reveal it to you. If there's a, you know what to pray, ask God to show you where you're lacking. Where do you need to learn? Where do you need to grow to keep going? Not for the past. Even if somebody's burnt you in the past, might as well get over it. I got teachers, I got principals, I got students. The one kid that I hit his knee with my drumstick one time, not a big deal because he wasn't paying attention, so I whacked him on the knee. Not a big deal, right? Well, the next day I got sued for breaking this kid's knee. What? What are you talking about here? I kicked him out of the band tonight because he said something to him. I said, George, out of here, quick. Okay. That was back when you thought you could do stuff like that as a teacher. And what happened was he had pinned his knee between the tractor and the fence post. So he scrunched up his knee. And the parents tried to blame me for that. Well, the school paid the bill because it was cheaper than fighting it. And I hate stuff like that. But anyway, that was really stressful. I'm being sued for something I didn't do. But I got over that. after about, I haven't gotten over that yet, have I? stupid kid. Hit his knee with a drumstick. Yeah, it's not a big thing. I just reached over and, hey, George, he was watching. It was one of those we're done with time here. It was one of those basketball games. We're tied, 4-4. It's a big school. And he's watching. We always, when the game was over, we played the school song instantly. Well, it was a tight ending. He's watching the stupid game. I said, George, I'll be watching the game. We got a job to do here. Didn't do it. Hit him with a stick, and I got in trouble. It's not as bad as a kid that threw across the aisle, so I got more trouble for that. Picked him up and said, anyway, we're kind of done, I guess, with that one. You see in the paper? Yeah, you see in the paper in a nursing home, there's an old wrestler, Vern Gagne, remember him? One of the old wrestler guys? He's in a nursing home with his dementia thing, and he picked up one of the residents and threw him. Killed him. But that was in his mind, because that's what he's always done, is picked up people and thrown them. And the rest, he walked, I guess he just went over and picked up a guy. And
he was wrestling.
Yeah, killed him. So if you ever go to a nursing home, check out the residents. Yeah, wrestlers or killers or whatever. Anyway, don't you have some things in your past, arguments and stuff with people that you wish you hadn't had? But then aren't there some things in your past that you wish you'd have stood for, too? So we're not looking for this thing to be a marshmallow Christian-making machine. But there are times we need to just show them the book and be done with it. And try to do your very best not to get into that contention and the pride and the anger and stuff. But when it does come, Paul tells us what to do. Get rid of them or get rid of you. And he's very, very clear about that. I think that's how Paul maintained his peace. He understood Christ. He understood what he was taught. He understood all that stuff. But when it came to these contending folks who are always looking for something wrong, always picking at you, whatever, he tried to show them, and then he just went on with his day. Forget about that. It's over with. And went on with his day. If we could do that, that'd be pretty good. Do you have something in your mind as a parent? You still have something in your mind you're still mad at your kids about, but you've already talked to them, you've already done it, but you still can't get over it? And you bring it up another couple days later, a couple months later, a couple years later? There's no point in doing that. It's over with. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll go upstairs in a couple minutes.